My name is Esther Williams. I'm the moderator of this panel session this morning. The program is devoted to women in high technology industries and is the first at WESCON. We hope it will serve to raise some questions and to show some directions that may be taken to obtain solutions to those questions. Our panel is composed of executives who have had personal experience with the problems connected with the achievement of improved utilization of women in managerial and professional stature in high technology industries. We hope the discussion and question session to follow will provide some how-to guidelines leading to the motivation of current management and to the woman employee training to be provided, both technical and managerial, and education on all levels of all employees as to the benefit of the change of status for women. At this time, I would like to just quickly run through the names of the persons on the panel, and then I will give you a more formal introduction of each of them. Each of them will make short introductory remarks, and then we will open the panel for questions, both among the panel members and from the audience. Holding a BS in Chemical Engineering from Newark College of Engineering, and currently working toward a Master's in Business Administration from Golden Gate University, our first panelist is Manager of Quality Assurance Systems Measurement and Analysis for the General Products Division of IBM in San Jose. She has recently taught equal opportunity program classes to managers of IBM on maximizing women resources. May I present Cynthia Pruitt. The second panelist is currently Compliance Manager for the Pacific Telephone Company in the Bay Area, with responsibility for responding to official and employee complaints that relate to discrimination. 20 years with the telephone company in labor relations and line management and traffic have furnished him with a great deal of experience in motivating people in all levels of management structures. His formal education includes a BA from the University of California at Berkeley in economics, Jim Hitchcock. The third panelist holds both a BS and an MS degree in mathematics, the former from California State Polytechnic College and the latter from Stanford. She has worked on radar cross-section studies, the analysis and development of a computer program to model scattering from aircraft, applications of scattering theory to crystals and numerical calculation of scattering by random and multi-object radar targets for Sylvania's Electronic Defense Laboratories before joining ESL Incorporated, where she is currently Manager of Information Sciences Department and Project Engineer for Digital Image Processing Studies. Our third panelist, Sandra Hawley. Fourth panelist today is Assistant Director of the Center for Leadership Development at the University of Santa Clara's Graduate School of Business. He presently designs, teaches, and coordinates management and supervisory development programs at the University of Santa Clara for hospitals, municipalities, and business enterprises, in addition to teaching graduate-level courses in management and communications for the university. He had provided similar programs for Peninsula Electronics firms as well as the Peruvian government. He has designed and taught management development programs for minority social and economic development in Stockton, and presented testimony as an expert witness to Senate subcommittees regarding the needs for managerial development by Bay Area minority small business, Dr. Tony Mallow. Our fifth panelist, who has a BA in mathematics from the University of Texas, is currently a senior systems analyst in marketing for Hewlett-Packard. She maintains that her major credentials to justify her appearance in this panel are, one, that she is a woman, two, that she is not currently in management, and three, that she has done extensive research on why women fail to achieve managerial positions. Carolyn Morris. The sixth panelist, Alfred J. Gardner, is assistant to the president of Lockheed Missiles and Space Company. He was in the Air Force for 23 years and retired as a colonel and command pilot. Most of his Air Force career was in research and development activities, advanced concepts in jet and rocket engines, and he was a member of small government team which did pioneer work in the development of liquid hydrogen as a jet engine and rocket fuel. participated in technical management and development and flight hardware for Gemini manned spaceflight program. He has a bachelor's of aeronautical engineering from New York and a master's from the same university, and a master of science in industrial engineering from Ohio State. He has been an active supporter of the Society of Women Engineers and participated in the Henniker Conference in 1971 and 72 and presented a paper and workshop in 1972. Alfred J. Gardner. To conclude the formal remarks by the panel, we have Dr. Lillian Singletary, Head of Electromagnetic Analysis Section at TRW Systems. The engineers and scientists in this group work on internal electromagnetic pulse analysis programs for spacecraft and missile systems. Some of the programs are directly funded contracts and others support TRW programs. She develops theoretical models and performs numerical calculations needed to corroborate and to apply these models to practical experimental situations. She routinely makes technical presentations to technical symposia and meetings, as well as to the government and TRW personnel on electromagnetic pulse and electromagnetic pulse interactions with the Air Force, Navy, and Army spacecraft and missile systems. She participated as a panelist in Second Careers for Women at Stanford University Symposium and has been active in counseling programs for high school students. Dr. Lillian Singletary. And now we will start with opening remarks from first panelist, Cynthia Pruitt. Cynthia?
I'd like to address, perhaps you might call it, the motivational forces that have to take place in industry today for women to advance and what the problems are in the high technology industries. First, I should say that there really are kind of two groups of women that are working in high technology industries today. And that is, number one, the small group of professionals, and secondly, the group of women that are come under the category of non-professionals, which could include such people as assemblers, secretaries, and pre-professionals. Now, the problems really are somewhat different for each group, and this is something that companies do have to address. A study made in the Bay Area of a number of companies that covered approximately 400,000 people showed that although there were 36% women employees in the corporations, less than 10% were in management. And the problem does become one of motivation, both from the company's point of view and from the woman's point of view. Many times the professionally trained woman already has some motivation factors built in. She has some expectations from her job. And particularly today, the environment is such that the media brings to the fore the fact that it is proper and right for women to have ambition when they go into industry. The second group of women, however, in my years of experience, I found that they are quite willing to accept the positions that are offered, and in many cases become so comfortably entrenched because of the programming that they undergo, fail to respond today when the opportunities are presented to them. It's very difficult to get them to change their thinking. So along these lines, since the majority of population in most companies are the non-exempt, most of my remarks will address that particular aspect. I think one of the things that industry must face up to, that is, they must go out, they must become socially conscious, and must put an effort into the schools early to get women stimulated to pursue careers that will enable them to reach whatever levels they desire. If you start out with a good background, I should say I'm fortunate since I have a degree in engineering, and so I started with a great big positive in my favor. A lot of women do not have this, and I think that that's something that they will want to have and will want to develop. And industry must go out into the high schools and into the colleges with very active programs to solicit and encourage women to go into fields that have normally been traditionally called, say, male professions. There's also internal stimulation that must be done by the corporations. It's very fine to agree that, yes, we must develop and promote women, and because we have 36% women in industry, we should therefore have 36% in all ranks of management. But you have to get those career paths going. Traditionally, if you have women in secretarial fields, they must go into jobs, say, as administrative assistants. But there are whole areas that can be explored. There are production control functions within corporations. There, of course, is the line management aspect, where you find a lot of women working in assembly. There are also other areas. There are the facilities engineering, that end of the business, the maintenance areas, the security areas, the safety areas. We're finding more and more that there are jobs available there. They're higher level jobs, and women need to be stimulated to consider them, and the companies have to have very strong programs so that they can train women to accept positions in this area. Just a couple of days ago, well, in the last week, I've talked to three women specifically, and because I am a manager, and because a lot of women know who I am, and they feel that, well, perhaps I have an insight as to, you know, how you do this thing once you get started, they've come to me with their problems and said, well, you know, I really want to consider what I should do next. And this one woman came to me. She has a degree, a teaching degree. She moved into industry and worked in a chemistry lab. Then she moved over and now does a lot of statistical analysis and use of the terminal as an analyst. And she said, you know, I'm now in my early 30s. I know I will be working for quite some time. I've been programmed not to consider a career. But she said, I've been talking to you and I've known you now for 2 years, and I've finally come to the realization that I need to have something that's more stimulating to me. I have to find a new position, and what sorts of things are open? And I said, well, have you ever considered management? And she said, yes. As a matter of fact, I have, and I think I want to become a line manager. So we discussed at length some of the things she could do. But she had not, you know, she had just not considered that as a career path, because, you know, that just wasn't the normal thing to do. And now she's enthusiastic about it. She realizes she's going to be in industry, and she wants to do something with her career. The third area is counseling for women themselves. I guess I've gone to a couple of transactional analysis courses where the word scripting comes out, but there's no question that women are continually scripted in their life as to what their expectations from life should be and what the woman's role is in life. And this is, to some measure, something that has to be changed by industry itself. You just can't go out and tell women, well, now we're opening up management jobs and come run for them, because women aren't ready. They just mentally have to mull that over and be able to recognize that those are career paths that they wish to pursue. They've got to rouse themselves out of the lethargy that they've been in, the normal mode of operating, and accept the change, because change is difficult for a man or a woman. So companies do have to have programs for women to do some introspection and to change their own motivations, because after all, you really can't motivate somebody. They have to motivate themselves, and if they're not ready, it's not going to happen. You will then have a number of unhappy people ultimately doing things that they really don't want to do. And then lastly, I think companies have to continue to work with the management men, the men in position, to stimulate their working with the women, because many, many women work for men, and men have to recognize that they have to counsel women a little bit differently. They have to perhaps work a little bit harder with them, work a little bit longer to overcome some of the reticence that's been programmed in for so long. And by doing this, will stimulate some of their own self-thoughts to get into management, or not necessarily even management, but higher level positions, maybe exempt positions as opposed to non-exempt. But I guess this all sums up to the fact that you do have to have rather aggressive programs on the part of addressing career paths as well as on the part of addressing the motivations of women that are working. Thank you.
Our next panelist is Jim Hitchcock from the Pacific Telephone Company.
Good morning. As Esther said a little earlier, I'm compliance manager for the Bay Area and Pacific Telephone. So while I've been asked to talk about training, my orientation is really more toward specific complaint investigation and compliance with the law. And so I'm problem-oriented, I guess you'd say. And it seems to me the problem is upward movement, upward mobility for women. The telephone business has traditionally been dependent upon top-level managers developed from within the business. Most of those at the top started in craft jobs, and some came in at the first level of management directly from college. It's consistent with our past practice and with the current law, by the way, that women should advance to all levels. We're different from many businesses and some of those that are represented here today in that we have rather large pool of women who've been in the telephone business for a long time, who've developed and shown what they could do on the job. The problem of upward mobility for women in my company is largely to do with the preconceptions men and women have about the role of women. Women's view of themselves often is limited by short-term objectives and low-level career goals right at the beginning. Women's stereotypes about themselves are just as damaging as the stereotypes men hold about women. And women tend to use other women as models, and they shouldn't limit their role models to other women. Once women are committed to the job of advancing through the lines of organization in a company like the telephone company, we have the job of making sure that they have that opportunity, and that's where my particular role fits. There's a tremendous advantage to the company in doing that too, because these women, as I said earlier, have a tremendous resource pool. They know what the company operates like. They know how to get things done. How many secretaries are running a department? I hesitate to tell you. The track record of women as successful employees indicates that they have potential. It's never been fully tapped. But the tools that are available to us are really the same tools that have always been used to develop male managers in the business. There isn't a training course that's going to do it. The tools include some of the kinds of things that I might mention. Basically, it's an assurance that there is equal access to things like the training programs, and those include technical programs mainly. The equal access to assessment programs, to appraisal systems that identify areas of weakness and strength and result in specific remedial action, generally that taken by the employee herself or himself. One of the most important things in a management development program is lateral movement, not promotion necessarily, but movement from job to job to gain a breadth of experience that builds a basis for promotion to the next higher level. And that's available, and it doesn't have to mean moving into 10 or 11 different cities in a period of as many years. It can mean moving in the same place from one job to another, and it is a growth experience, and it's the kind of testing period that creates the pool of promotable managers that we're talking about. And of course, the opening up career paths to women in all categories of jobs. Career counseling was mentioned here before. The affirmative action results are something that can be monitored and help to keep those paths open. And by that, I mean, if your company like mine has evaluation systems for managers, affirmative action is one item that should be in that evaluation program. By affirmative action, I mean the development of people, of women and minorities, to promotable status. In other words, the manager's pay should be affected by whether or not he does it. We don't think that we can change attitudes. We've tried a couple of times unsuccessfully, but we do think that we can influence behavior by the kind of visible payroll appearance of a response to success, whatever terms you want to put that in. A mechanical thing, a simple mechanical thing, is to be sure that women are actually considered for all jobs, that they're in a source pool, that the source pool is identified, that it's available for a compliance officer like myself to come in and look at. And that we're trying to do, we are doing. And again, of course, de-sexing all jobs in the minds of the supervision and in the minds of the potential women candidates is absolutely essential. Now we have men helping to de-sex women's jobs by moving into clerical. There have been, I think, as many men moving into clerical and operator jobs as there have been women moving into what were traditionally the craft jobs, the male, quote, male jobs. Well, the impact of this thing is a humanistic one, of course, in one respect, and we think that it's just plain right to judge people as individuals and abolish labels and stereotypes, but there's a reward for industry, too, and I feel personally that the diversity of human talent that is available through expanding this source of management to include all people is one of the things that can keep the telephone business and any business vital, active, changing up with the times, and still in business.
Thank you, Jim. Now we're going to hear from Sandra Hawley from ESL.
Good morning. I think already you've begun to see a couple different themes start to develop here, even though this is unrehearsed and none of us have ever talked about these subjects together as far as what we were actually going to discuss today. And one of the themes that I think is going to be very apparent is that the very basic problem is the aspiration level of women. I think that our society actually programs women to arrive at the point of adulthood with very low aspirations. And many of the things that we're discussing today have to be directed toward changing the different effects of society that have this kind of impact. So I'd like to quickly summarize what I think are some of the different ways that society functions to actually reduce a woman's ambitions. Perhaps the most equal treatment that a woman ever receives in her life in the society in this country is in the first 2 years of her life. It's quite clear that by the time she's 4 or 5 years old, she has been strongly influenced already in certain career directions. Now, that may seem kind of strange, but it is true that boys' and girls' roles are very well differentiated by the time they actually start school. So there's a certain kind of imprinting that goes on very, very early, and it's very subtle, but it's something that's going to have to be changed because it begins already to reduce the number of women that will follow certain kinds of career opportunities. And of course, we're not interested today in getting all women to move into technical areas or all women to take over areas that men have traditionally been in, but only to really removing the roadblocks that have limited women's ambitions. So first of all, she receives this early imprinting at home, then of course she begins her school career. It's, I think, well known by most of you that there's a lot of stereotyping that's reinforced in our public school system. An interesting survey of junior high school teachers included the question, what attributes do you assign to a good male and a good female student? Now this is for junior high school. I'd like to read to you a few of the adjectives and see if you feel any confusion about which list was which. Active, adventurous, aggressive, assertive, curious, energetic, enterprising, frank, and independent. Or the other list, appreciative, calm, conscientious, considerate, cooperative, mannerly, poised, and obliging. I don't think very many of you thought that the first list was describing the girls. You might notice that there's a high correlation between the attributes that our school teachers feel the boy students have and the attributes that most of us would say are important for any kind of position of responsibility. I don't think many of us expect our leaders to be calm, mannerly, and obliging. The attitudes that our teachers have do very strongly affect the students. There really is no question of that. When it's still true that the majority of junior high school girls, when asked, what career do you expect to follow? What do you expect to do when you grow up? That sort of question, will say one of the four areas, teacher, secretary, nurse, or mother. And that is still true to this day. It's beginning to change, but it's still true. Those are precisely the areas that the teachers are reflecting, and it's precisely what the students are learning in the literature. We're all familiar with the grade school idea of the American family, which is the active father, the domestic mother, the older brother, and the little girl and who's following her mother around in the kitchen. So there's a lot of stereotyping that is continued and reinforced in our schools. But if a girl gets through our public school system, she's going to find that she still encounters problems in the university. This, I think, is the area that's beginning to change the most rapidly. It's well organized. It's an area that that industry can have an effect on. But it's still true, and that if a woman wants to get into the technical fields, many of the schools will very much limit the number of women that they'll allow to even be admitted to their courses. If a woman does get into some of these areas, she finds it's harder to remain there. More is expected of her than it is of men. And finally, if she completes her college education and still is interested in a career, none of these things have reduced her ambition, then she finds that she has another conflict that's going to go on probably the rest of her life, and that's with resolving the problems that come from trying to pursue a career and trying to lead a normal family life. And this is something that, again, the general education is going to have to change, something that the attitudes of the public, is certainly the attitudes of the men, are going to have to change. In order for a woman to remain married and to really be active in her career, her husband has to be supportive of her. The conflicts are just too deep. Otherwise, she's very apt to give up her career. In fact, I think the most common thing is that a woman does give up her own ambitions and her own desire for fulfillment for the pressures that her family and her husband and her society put on her. So that's sort of what I see as some of the answers to the question, how does society program women for secondary roles? Now, before I try to address a few positive things that I think industry in particular can do, I'd like to say why I think it's necessary that something be done. A lot of people will still, even at this day, say, well, that's maybe true, but it's worked out fine in the past. After all, why should it change? And I think it's important that we begin to emphasize the reasons why it must change. It's not really a question of choice any longer. The society has changed so much, and in particular, the pressures of technology and of population have eroded away the traditional role of a woman. It's no longer possible to receive the respect of your community, to receive the status that women in the past received from, for instance, having a large family. I think we're already at the point that many women are going to start to feel that there is an inverse amount of status, and it's inversely related to the number of children she has. In the past, a woman was a very necessary economic partner to her husband. She often worked and performed hard physical labor, and she certainly had a full-time job in maintaining her home. Well, technology has made that no longer the case. It's not necessary for a woman to devote her full energies to maintaining her home. The free time that she's gained from these advances in technology have not, in general, caused her to find creative solutions, perhaps, to society's problems. Instead of being a contributor now, she's becoming, in the main, a consumer. And it's important to be a consumer. We need a lot of consumers. It's a fun role to be a consumer, but there's no status connected with it, and there's no sense of fulfillment. So we now have a huge number of people in our society that are sincerely looking for a way to make a contribution. And I don't think there's any way to reverse this trend. We've got to encourage women to make a contribution. And of course, as will be pointed out by everyone here today, the key to changing a lot of these factors in society is certainly education. Rather than address what industry can do internally, I'd like to address some of the things I think that can be done to affect the general attitudes of the public. Because without affecting these, the high technology industries are going to find there simply are not enough women to even begin to develop. The first area where industry can have an effect, I think, is on the attitudes of our local communities. I think that industry should begin to make sure that all the activities of the women in their country are well publicized. We should start letting the mothers and fathers of young children know that there are active career women in their local neighborhoods, that women are filling challenging positions very successfully. This will help change some of the early imprinting that our children are receiving even previous to school. And of course, as has been mentioned already, we need to start interacting with the local school systems. This has been done for quite a while, but it needs to continue to be done. It's especially important that we make sure we're contacting not just the students, but the teachers and counselors. The stereotypes that they still are holding and are passing down to the students must be broken down. And finally, I think that we can have a very strong effect on that last step in a woman's educational career, the university. Many of our companies already recruit directly on campus, and we can make it quite clear that we are looking for qualified women, that women have equal opportunities and have the potential for very challenging careers. I think by doing that, we'll find that many universities will actually begin recruiting women for some of their technical departments. Thank you.
Thank you, Sandra. One of the things I hope some of this publicity may do is to encourage young women to believe that engineering is a lot more fun than a lot of the other careers they could choose. Our next panelist is Dr. Tony Mallow.
I think I heard the magic word, university. And since my colleagues have pretty well started to light the way, what I'd like to share with you this morning is a model that is really bare bones. But it, I believe, addresses itself to the kinds of situations that have been mentioned and will be mentioned. And I believe that in our industry, we are particularly well directed, and I think particularly well programmed for innovation. As a matter of fact, as you well know, the electronics industry has been for years noted and defined as the growth industry of our country. Jim has mentioned that there is an extremely large pool of human talent that has not yet been tapped in our industry. Well, how do we do this? How do we go about making better utilization of our human resources? And specifically, women who are potential managers. Well, let's take a look. Perhaps it means doing a number of things. First, setting the climate. This is organizational climate. This is not outside the organization. We're just talking about in-house. Identifying potential managers. Identifying organizational managerial needs. And then adapting the organization environment to these needs. Well, what can we do in setting the climate? Well, one of the suggestions is making a clear and genuine commitment to involve women in positions of managerial responsibility. Identifying potential managers. Conducting a thorough organizational appraisal to identify potential managerial talent. the corporate audit, but directed toward the location, the identification, the assessment of potential managerial talent. And then looking about and identifying and projecting the organization's managerial needs. Not today only, but in the next 3 to 5 years. Who is that group? Who are these individuals that we're concerned with? Well, typically, we believe that in our industry, there are a relatively large number of women college graduates who have had no business administration training. They're potentials. Let's look into it. Let's find out what's going on. What are some of their aspirations? What are some of their abilities? How can we do something as managers? Secondly, for women employees in non-management positions who show supervisory potential, is it necessary for someone to come and say, you know, I'm interested in management? Shouldn't we have a rapport established so that we know this without having some kind of a formal meeting? And women employees currently in supervisory positions who show growth potential. And that, I believe, is the old performance. We talk about it. Hopefully, we're chosen because of it. And I think that this has not changed. But performance is the ultimate in achieving any kind of success. Because you can say, I've done it, and here are the results. It isn't something that I'm giving lip service to. And two areas that somehow in our industry are being touched upon increasingly, but I believe not quite enough. Mature women outside the company who wish to resume their careers. The women who have left, who have had their children grow, and who are very productive kinds of people who can come back and do a job. And then the fifth source, I believe, for new college recruits. I think that this is an area that is very difficult to stop. It will happen, and it will happen increasingly, because we will need more, and we do need more. All right? Now, let's look at this a little more realistically. This is the program. We're talking about formal training programs. We're talking about personal coaching. We've talked about, and some of my colleagues have mentioned, the rotation of job assignments and special project assignments, serving on committees, special stretching assignments. But now, what do we expect from this? Realistically, managers should not expect a complete change in personality or character. You're not rebuilding anybody. And the degree of mastery of new managerial techniques varies in direct proportion to the time the person's on the job. Let's wait and see. Let's give them a chance to get their feet wet, we say, to the young person coming in the door. And how about the impacts of personal development program and how this will affect their peers and their colleagues on the job? Now, the development programs and the various dimensions suggest a certain amount of flexibility in thinking. And that also implies that to make these changes work, we have to believe, or at least consider, that most companies can be managed much better than they are now, that the change in organization and in the competitive environment requires different and more advanced and broader management skills, and that encouragement of personal growth and improved performance must be part of the job of the manager, just as he is required on a project basis to develop new instruments, develop new techniques for doing things. Is it not reasonable to expect that his responsibility will involve the development of all his subordinates?
Thank you, Tony. And our next speaker is Carolyn Morris from Hewlett-Packard.
There are a couple of questions I would like to bring out. And the first question was something that was put to me a couple of weeks ago when I was standing on my haunches and saying that women should be considered a little more favorably as far as management positions at Hewlett-Packard. And that was, why should we consider women? Why should we take the time and the money? And what makes you sit there and say that we should really invest all this in you? And if we have equally qualified men, why should we worry about women? That's a question that I think most women don't really stop to consider an answer for, and it kind of takes you by surprise because you're so fired up and you believe that you're so great that it should be obvious to everyone, but it isn't. And especially when the question is coming from a man and he's a manager and you're not, it really kind of takes you back. So I decided to do some digging around and came up with some of the same statistics that Tony just mentioned, and that is due to the growth of labor and industry and also due to the influx of women in industry, that around the 1980s, we're going to be running out of men who are qualified to be managers and who do have the leadership responsibilities. And so what we need to do is to start finding a substitute if people don't want to call it a fair shot. And I think probably a pretty good substitute or a pretty good place to start is to start training your women. I would like to say that I'm not concerned about all women, really, because there are varying types. And I don't want all women to leave their families and give up their homes and give their kids away and all this kind of thing and rush right out to get a profession. But I am saying that, and for those women that do this, for those women that say, well, I don't really want to get out in business. I'm perfectly content to stay at home and take care of the family and the husband and 2.5 kids and station wagon and all this, I think that's fine. I think that's as hard a profession as any of us have. But for those of us who do want to get into industry and we feel that we're just as capable of executive positions as anyone else, then I think we deserve a fair chance. And somehow we have to go about convincing people of this. I'm not really talking about discrimination. I think all of us know what discrimination is, and we have some new legal backing that's going to help tone this down. I really believe that if discrimination had been done away with yesterday, we wouldn't be getting any further today, because we as women simply have not developed the attitudes that it takes to get going and to go in and prove ourselves as such. I think that we have a big job to do, and it is concerned not only with reconditioning ourselves, which is pretty tough, but it has to do with reconditioning all those people that work around us. And I think each one of us, if we were to stand back and say, what have we done today to reinforce some kind of a sexual role type of thing? I bet we could all come up with pretty good examples. It's not only on the part of men, it's equally on the part of women. A lot of women that go into industry, and high technical industries are certainly no different. The thing about high technical industries is, for some reason, it has a reputation that when women get into there, they can really go to the top. After all, you're high paid. You know, you can win those positions. Well, all of us are high paid in technical industries. Obviously, we have worked a great deal to get degrees and to become what we are as professional women. But there's a lot of professional men. The question comes, if we are considered professional, when we are hired in along with our male counterpart, we may be paid the same, we may not. But in 3 years from now, are we going to be progressing as far as he is? Are we going to be then on an equal level as far as salary and title? And this is where I think we start falling short.
You've reached the end of side one. To continue, stop your cassette player, turn over the cassette, and restart the machine.